Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Before we get started today, a word from our sponsors. We got you guys to check out a book by Rob Grindstaff. It's called Hannah's Voice. And if you're a libertarian, a liberty lover, this is a book that you guys might be interested in. Our buddy Rob Grindstaff wanted us to get the word out, so I wanted to tell you a little bit about it. Hannah's Voice is a novel, it's a fiction novel, about a young girl who stops speaking. And the controversy over why she stops speaking embroils the entire nation into a debate on the verge of a civil war, basically. And so you guys should definitely check out that book. You can find it at Amazon.com. You can get the Kindle version. There's also the paperback. So don't forget to check that out. Rob Grindstaff, that's Grindstaff. And the book is Hannah's Voice, H-A-N-N-A-H, Hannah's Voice. So check that out and grab a copy so that we can continue to bring you awesome podcasts like this. And now, back to the show. All right, Liggety Laura Myers, welcome back.
You always call me that.
I know, because I don't know, it just kind of flows for some reason, but I feel like more like a radio host when I talk like that, I guess. But Laura, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
Nice to see you again. So today's topic on Wednesday, June 24th, is going to be talking about the budget brawl between Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and their battle against the establishment for the upcoming summer session. We are counting down the days because Laura Myers is leaving us at the end of summer. She's going back to Kansas because she's got to finish her degree at Kansas State. Mm-hmm. Get that journalism degree, right?
Yes.
So no more intern status after that, though. Hopefully we're going to be able to offer her a full-time job when she gets done. If you guys haven't been paying attention to my Facebook page, I only made one little short post about it, but I'm actually going to be packing up and moving operations. So we're taking the Libertarian Republic away from the belly of the beast, away from the dark heart of evil Washington, D.C., and I'm moving home to Kansas City, Missouri.
He just wants to follow me.
And I want to go back to... Yeah, Laura got me all
it's
excited.
It's all for Laura.
Yeah, I got to Kansas City on a Friday. I'm excited to move back home because I get to spend some more time with my dad and my nephew and my family in Missouri, because I've been on the East Coast for 10 years, ladies and gentlemen, and man, I feel like I've done it all. New York City, Washington, D.C., then back to New York, then back to D.C., and who knows, I might end up back here one day, never say never, but I do want to spend some more time with the family and get back to my roots a little bit and, save a lot of money, because I want to invest in people like Laura so I can hire her when she gets done with college and spend some money on the Libertarian Republic instead of all of these exorbitant high cost of living out here. I don't need to live in D.C. or New York to feel cool. I'm done with that.
I'm above that.
Yeah, so I'm moving back to D.C., or excuse me, to Kansas City, and I'm going to be taking the business with me. So the Libertarian Republic continues as usual. But I have plans, now that I won't be in a no-fly zone, to start giving you guys gun reviews with drones. So you guys should be excited because Laura's excited. She wants to be one of the drone. She wants to be one of the drone girls. So the plan is that we're going to start shooting guns with drones and doing reviews of them so that we can have some awesome new video content for you guys coming out in Missouri. And I think you guys will really appreciate that. It's funny because a lot of my fans and like followers and stuff are like, "You're not from Missouri. You're just city slicker boy." And I'm like, "You don't know me. You don't know.
You don't know my life.
You don't know my life. Exactly. Exactly. You don't know how many guns I have and what my background is." I'm excited to get back to my roots and to provide you guys with some more content. I'll be able to do more video content out there because it's just going to be more affordable. And so that's kind of exciting. So look for that. And let's get into the topic. Budget brawl gives Ted Cruz and Rand Paul a chance to break out. And we're going to be talking about Rand Paul and Ted Cruz in opposition to one another today. But Laura seems to like Ted Cruz, maybe a little more than me. I hate Ted Cruz now. He's on my shit list because of the NSA stuff. Because he didn't stand with Rand when he had a chance to help him in the NSA filibuster. And Ted Cruz wasn't there. Mike Lee was there helping out. But where was Ted when we needed him?
I don't have that much butthurt about that.
Why? You don't care about the civil liberties? You don't care about the Fourth Amendment, Laura?
No, God.
You just said you don't care. You said, no, I don't care.
Okay. No, I disagree with you. Okay. Yes, I care. I can see it through And of course, I'm going to get flack for seeing, you know, through a PR lens rather than like a principal lens. But
boo.
I know.
Boo.
I can just see why his team would say maybe you shouldn't team up with Rand Paul, because that's going to make you the beta male in the presidential race.
Okay. So you're trying to understand where he's coming from. But the problem with this is that when it comes to actual matters of principle, when the rubber meets the road in the Senate, this isn't about just PR, okay? This was actually an issue where our liberties were at stake.
And I agree with you. I'm just
You're trying to justify that evil bastard from Texas, Ted Cruz. Sell out. All right, moving on. Ted Cruz and Rand Paul have created national profiles by picking fights in the U.S. Senate, and the two Republican presidential rivals will soon have a chance to engage in another as they oppose efforts to roll back automatic spending cuts enacted as part of a 2011 budget agreement. These are the sequester cuts. It's a brawl that will allow them to portray themselves as principled guardians of the Republic against a classic Washington establishment combine. Republicans who are worried about cuts to the Pentagon budget, and Democrats who didn't want spending cuts in the first place. Paul is already firing off warning shots. He says, "I think there are a great deal of problems for people who want to argue that they are fiscal conservatives and yet would simply borrow hundreds of billions of dollars for defense," Paul said in an email last week. "I think it's irresponsible and dangerous to the country." Considering the political forces arrayed against them, the two Republican rebels are unlikely to prevail in the legislative fight, but they could win politically even as they lose legislatively. Like you were saying earlier, you thought Ted Cruz, no. Sell out. One of the two high-stakes battles that will dominate the next several months in Congress, the other will be over Obamacare if the Supreme Court upends the president's health care plan before the end of the month. The spending debate is just getting underway. It will start with the Senate debate over a defense spending bill, which Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has identified as his next legislative priority, and continue through the fall when Congress will have to raise the debt ceiling. So let's just define this real quick so we understand. So these are the budget battles is a big one. This is the other one is Obamacare. So the issue of what's at stake over Obamacare is whether or not the federal government could set up or fund exchanges in the states, or whether or not those states were supposed to fund them themselves. And my guess here is that the Supreme Court is not going to come down on our side. They are not. They have. Freaking rare has it been to see the Supreme Court siding with liberty. It's been very rare. And especially when it comes to Obamacare, the idea or the talk on Capitol Hill was why Chief Justice John Roberts decided to maintain Obamacare was, well, the neocons sort of gave their own example of like, oh, well, this is going to limit the Commerce Clause in the future. And there's an argument there to be made. But the other argument was that he didn't want to be seen as the guy who overturned a very popular Democratic proposal, that John Roberts was simply wanting to maintain his legacy on the Supreme Court. So that's what's at stake with Obamacare. I, again, as a sort of pessimistic libertarian on this one, I'm going to have to say I don't think that the Supreme Court is going to overturn that, although it would be amazing. It would be a miracle.
It would crumble the entire exchange.
Right. It would destroy it, and that would be a beautiful day for liberty. Let's move on here, talking about the budget battles. The budget and spending fight highlights widening divisions in the Republican Party between conservatives like Florida's Marco Rubio, concerned about shoring up the military, and Tea Party-aligned Republicans like Cruz and Paul, more committed to limiting the size of government. Hell yeah. They're all seeking the 2016 nomination. The politics of the federal government, which has tied Congress in knots for 5 years, are changing as the U.S. budget deficit improves and the Republican Party places a greater priority on military strength and national security concerns amid terrorism threats in Syria and Iraq. Now, pushing off on the sooner side, so Rand Paul has been slipping in polls recently, and the theory on why that may be is because people are less concerned about budgets and deficits than they are about terrorism, the threats like ISIS. You know, we posted a story yesterday that showed ISIS drowning those people in cages. That kind of stuff captures the attention of the American people.
And rightfully so.
And naturally, Rand Paul, as the Bill O'Reilly called him quasi-isolationist, which is BS, Rand Paul is less of a hawk than Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. And God bless him. Happy to hear that. I love that. You know, I'm you know, the last decade we've been in a state of perpetual war. It's time to tone down. And I support Rand Paul, but unfortunately the American people are not like us. They tend to be a little bit more warmonger than the average libertarian. Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, senior senator from Kentucky, will work to cut a deal with Democrats, while Paul, Cruz, and other Tea Party-aligned lawmakers will be very obdurate and standing firm on their ground, said Steve Bell, a former Republican Senate budget aide. Over the next 4 or 5 months, you're going to see more clearly than ever the balkanization of the Republican Party, said Bell. The debate will put Paul and Cruz once again at odds with their leadership. They've divided with McConnell in the past on spending agreements as well as issues like surveillance laws. The first policy proposal Paul announced as he declared his presidential bid was a plan to require a balanced federal budget every year. Last year, Cruz tried to stop the Senate from allowing an increase in the debt ceiling without offsetting spending cuts by forcing a 60-vote threshold. More recently, Cruz has shown some signs of conflict. In March, he voted for an amendment sponsored by Rubio to raise defense spending with no corresponding cuts. Cruz's office makes the point that he also voted for a separate amendment requiring spending offsets. So when Cruz didn't get what he wanted with the alternate amendment, he went ahead and voted for it anyway because he didn't want to be seen as anti-military. And of course, Rubio is like, blow out the budget, spend, spend, spend. I'm a conservative. Don't believe me, guys. Give me the nomination for president and I'll spend all your monies. Like, where the hell is Rubio on anything? And when it comes to fighting for limited government, like, have we seen, when was the last time we saw Marco Rubio standing up for limited government? Crickets.
Exactly.
Crickets. I wish I had a soundboard operator right now that could play this crickets noise in the background. Maybe when I get to Missouri, I'll hire one of those. Now, this battle is going to be an opportunity for both Paul and Cruz to curry favor with grassroots activists by going against their party's leadership. But it also pits them against some voters. This is true. Polls show concerns about U.S. debt and deficits, which as recently as 2013 were the top issue after the economy, have dramatically diminished, falling behind such other issues as immigration, healthcare, and foreign threats. Nobody gives a rat's ass about debt or deficits, and that's the truth, even among Republican voters, said Bell. Terrorism and the economy are much more potent issues right now. Well, but again, that could change. Senator Lindsey Graham recently highlighted the coming intra-party fight, which could spill over into a debate over the debt ceiling this fall, and suggested it as a way for voters to distinguish more responsible Republican presidential contenders from grandstanders. At the end of the day, something has to be done. We can't default, he told reporters at a GOP gathering in Utah. This is going to be a challenge for our party. There will be a bunch of people in our party and in there saying, no, no, no. Somebody's got to find a way to say yes, Graham said. You like my Graham impression there?
I want you to talk about your rotating first lady.
Talk about the bro with no hoe.
Yes.
Yeah, his rotating first lady. It's like Mitt Romney got in trouble for saying binders of women. But I think Lindsey Graham must get a pass because he's quote-unquote gay.
Quote-unquote gay.
Question mark?
Dot, dot, dot. Dot, dot, dot. Question mark?
Exactly. But the Republican family feud will be on display sooner than the debt ceiling fight. McConnell has said that a defense spending bill is his next priority. This will trigger some discussion or confrontation over spending cuts slated to take effect starting in the new fiscal year in October, said Oklahoma Rep. Tom Cole, a GOP speaker. He's close to John Boehner. So, interesting little situation that we find ourselves in. And I guess... you know, it comes down to, you know, your principles. You know, like, do you stand up for your principles or do you fund the government? I mean, the problem is that these guys all have inherently, there's some truth to what Lindsey Graham says in the sense that, let me pull his quote up real quick. He said, talking about grandstanders versus people who are grandstanding versus people who are really serious. Now, Ted Cruz strikes me as a grandstander. In a lot of ways. Now, and I say that because when it came to his fight, his filibuster to shut down the government, I was excited by that. But even he had to know that it wasn't going to stop the Obamacare, right? And yeah. it felt to me, and again, this is just a feeling. I don't know this for sure because this is an opinion show. But I think that Ted probably at the time felt a little bit... like you said earlier about Rand Paul, like he felt like he was the beta male. Like he was the beta boy. And Rand Paul had made such a huge splash with his drone filibuster that Ted Cruz wanted to get his filibuster.
So he had to go for 21 hours instead of 13.
Exactly. And he had to shut down the government, which I'm all for, baby. That was exciting. Mm-hmm. But Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio are going to try and avoid that at all costs. They don't want to have another shutdown like they did before. And probably rightfully so from a political perspective. It got blamed on the Republicans. It made them look bad. But still, the Republicans now control the Senate. Mm-hmm. The Republicans now control the House. And there's a chance they may control all three branches of government when it comes to the 2016 elections. Or excuse me, they may control the... there's a single conservative vote majority in the Supreme Court right now. Is that right? There's of all the Supreme Court justices, there's like a one vote majority of conservatives. We'll have to double check that. Well, look that up real quick. Look up the Supreme Court justices while I blather on. But the Senate might be the Senate, the House, and the executive, the White House, might be controlled by Republicans in 2016, which would be kind of exciting if we had an actual conservative Republican president. Pull up the Supreme Court justices. Supreme Court of the United States. We want to see. We want to make sure that we're right about this. I know some of our listeners right now are like, you idiots. We already know this. But some people don't. So we want to make sure that we're correct about that. Currently, the Chief Justice is John Roberts. He's a conservative. Can we see just the list of the people? Yeah, composition. Here we go. So we got Sonia Sotomayor, liberal. Stephen Breyer, don't know. Alito, definitely a conservative. Elena Kagan, liberal. Clarence Thomas, conservative. Scalia, conservative. John Roberts is a conservative. Anthony Kennedy, I don't know. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a liberal. So we'd have to go through and check it. It's the ones that we're not sure on is Anthony Kennedy, Stephen Breyer. It's Anthony Kennedy. Let's see. Looks like, nominated by Ronald Reagan. Yeah, Gerald Ford. Looks like he's a conservative. So yeah, we do have a bit of a conservative. Yeah, let's get one more. No, we know Ginsburg. Let's see. Stephen Breyer. Did we already get him? There we go. Stephen Breyer, nominated by who? Bill Clinton. Yeah, so there's your Democrat. So, yeah, it looks like we've got a pretty balanced court, except it would be nice to have a conservative/libertarian government. I mean, I don't know. The thing is that the reality is, Laura, is that when it comes to limited government, I mean, government always grows, but even under the most conservative/libertarian president we've had, Ronald Reagan, government still grew during his presidency. And Cato Institute and Reason Magazine have done research on the effect of divided government, and they found that government grows the slowest when government is divided, mm-hmm. and specifically when it's a Republican president, or excuse me, a Democratic president with Republican-controlled legislatures. So theoretically, if
gridlock is the point.
Gridlock is the point, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. But imagine this. Imagine, Laura, a situation in 2016. Let's say our dreams come true, and Rand Paul wins the presidency, or Carly Fiorina wins the presidency, and we have let's just stop being such pander boys and girls fanboys and say Carly Fiorina wins. And Carly Fiorina is the president, and then the House and the Senate are controlled by Republicans, Republican majority. Then we talk about ramming through as many bills as we can, cutting taxes as quickly as we can, eliminating agencies as quickly as we can. I don't know how much of a radical Carly Fiorina is, but it would be exciting to see that kind of sweep, a clean sweep.
Sure.
If 8 years would be nice, but the winds of political fortunes might change, and then the legislatures, of course, get turned over every 2 years. So we don't know what would happen, but it would be exciting. And let's get to the main topic of this, and let's just hash this out between you and me. Rand Paul versus Ted Cruz. I mean, obviously, I think our listeners know, if they listened to us before, why do we like Rand Paul? We like this budget that he's proposed, this flat tax. This is the kind of thing that gets people excited, talking about a flat tax that I believe the rate that he has, 14.5% rate applied to all workers earning more than $50,000 a year. And what the issue here is that people, and the people that are complaining, is that everybody would have to pay taxes, right?
Oh no, equality under the law.
Oh no. They're like, this is a tax cut for the rich. Well, The reality is that you can't not, you should not pay into the system. I mean, if somebody has to pay, we should all have to pay. Progressives like the progressive income tax because the rich pay more, right? So the more you make, the more you pay, which is unfair because it just unfairly assumes that just because you make more money that that penalizing you is going to spur the economy or that it's going to help people who make less money. It doesn't, because the money goes to the government, right? But the 14.5% income tax would probably increase the amount of revenue. Why? Because more people would be in compliance. Because a lot of people don't pay their taxes or don't pay their taxes properly because they don't understand it.
Right.
You know, if I knew that I could pay 14.5% every year, you know, you could put your taxes on a postcard and mail it in with a check. And that would be it. And it would be nice. Do you pay taxes yet, Laura? You haven't. You're not there yet.
I think I paid like $300 in taxes.
Yeah. will see. But thankfully, you're not one of those idiot college students who has to learn the lesson of like, oh, the real world, and now I'm a conservative.
No, my mom's an accountant. My dad is a blue-collar, self-employed. We hate the government.
But most of your fellow college students are big fans of government, right? They like because they're college loans and they're...
absolutely.
Yeah, and they like Obama and Bernie Sanders. I'm sure Bernie Sanders is real popular
They're
right
Sander
now.
Warriors.
They love Bernie Sanders out there. Yeah. But when it comes to tax proposals, Rand Paul's got the big one, flat tax. Bill O'Reilly said the other night, and Bill O'Reilly's a smart guy. He's not an idiot. I don't always agree with him, but he's not stupid. And he says that he doesn't think the numbers add up. He thinks that a flat tax would have to be around 19%, not 14.5%, in order to maintain revenue levels, because you couldn't just start deleting government agencies overnight. The president, not being a dictator, would have to go through legislative action in order to actually start cutting spending.
You can talk numbers as long as you want, but I mean, in principle, a flat tax, that principle itself is cool.
Yeah.
That it was proposed.
Yeah, it's excited.
And of course, someone wants to like poke at his proposal and say, well, it's actually...
The correct
percent would be this.
Right. I'm curious what Ted Cruz thinks about the proposal. I wonder if he's a little bit jealous or not. I wouldn't try and presume of what he's thinking here, but he's probably jealous that Rand made this big proposal before him.
I've had some pretty moderate Republican friends of mine send me messages and talk to me, and they like it. They loved the proposal, you know?
Yeah.
They were weary at first, but they read through it, and they said, yeah, I kind of like it. You know, these are more open-minded, not so party-aligning moderates, but... Nonetheless.
Yeah, yeah. Ted Cruz has said that he supports a flat tax before. I know he hates the IRS, but the thing is that Rand Paul is the one who gets all the news for it right now because he made the actual concrete proposal. So Ted Cruz is again sort of like running B-team junior varsity to Rand Paul's A-team on this one, at least from our side of things. Now, when we're talking about overall polls, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz are slipping, right? They're suffering from candidates like
Jeb Bush,
right?
Right. Yeah.
You're a big Jeb Bush fan, right?
Oh my God, yeah, that's why I'm working here.
Yeah.
I have a theory about Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz. So a couple weeks ago, I went to the College Republicans National Convention here. And, big establishment guys. You know, the ones that wear like chubbies and smoke cigars and drink scotch and try and wife you up because you can cook. So, but they're all Jeb fans, right? Loyal to Jeb, just because he's safe. He's the safe candidate for conservatives.
He can win.
Because conservatives are conservative.
Right.
And so I think that libertarians should not be outwardly supportive of Ted Cruz because those conservatives that support Jeb Bush hate Rand Paul because the libertarian and Ron Paul following like illegitimizes him. To those people. So if we don't like Cruz, if we don't follow Cruz, then they're like, oh, maybe he's okay because not all of these Ron Paul crazies are following him, and then maybe he'll get elected. And I kind of like the idea of him winning the primary.
Ted Cruz is dead to me.
So exactly.
Dead to me.
Ted Cruz.
Down with Ted Cruz. Until Ted Cruz does something cool, I've replaced him with Carly Fiorina.
Sorry. Austin's fangirling.
I'm fangirling on Carly Fiorina because she has got the stuff, man. She has got the stuff. She's got the plans. She's got experience. She's not a politician, which normally it kind of turns me off because like when I see Ben Carson, for example, I'm kind of like, eh, that guy seems like he's not ready for it. But Carly Fiorina seems like she's ready for it. And I'm just sort of excited. I think that she's got the right attitude and the right experience that we would look for if somebody's not going to be coming from a political background. So anyways, our buddy R. Brownell, our anonymous writer, just posted. He says he's about to meet Ted Cruz. He's really excited. That's hilarious. Ted Cruz is kind of in trouble with conservatives nowadays because he flip-flopped on the support for the TPA, the trade bill. And he's reversed on his position because he's got a lot of political pressure from his base, because he was seen as supporting President Obama's trade bill on this, trying to fast track it. And now Ted Cruz is saying that this is a corrupt backdoor deal between Republican leaders in the White House. And he wrote this op-ed on Breitbart where he lashes out at Obama and GOP leaders, saying the American people do not trust them. Well, then where were you on this one, Ted? I mean, you were the one who was all supporting the fast track of this bill. Now, let's be honest here. Laura and I are not trade experts. We're not going to be discussing the nuances of this bill. But from a political perspective, it doesn't look good for Ted to be supporting the president. And then when it comes down to it, certainly flip-flop like that. So, Ted, we got an eye on you, buddy. We want you to be our guy. And Laura likes you. So come on. For Laura, can you please not be such a flip-flopper and not be such a skeezball and just support Rand when he's doing the right thing and fighting for our liberties? And why don't you get out front, Ted? Why don't you lead? I mean, the problem is with Ted Cruz is that Rand Paul is always in the lead when it comes to our real conservative principles, our real libertarian principles.
He's a trailblazer.
Rand is the trailblazer. Mm-hmm. Ted is the also Rand. And listen, I know that Ted's got a huge ego. Who wouldn't in the Senate? I know Rand's got one too. But Ted, you can't let your ego get in the way of your politics, buddy. We like you, or at least Laura likes you. You know, you're still on my shit list.
I like my Texas
boys.
You like
your Texas boys, right? Ted Cruz. But we're hoping that for the greater good, Ted, that let's say you the worst happens, and I know that you'll probably stab your ears out by hearing this, but if you have to step down, please support Rand. You know, I know members on your staff, and if you're listening to this, Ted, which obviously you must listen to the show every day, and especially all the way through after 30 minutes of my blathering, you must still be here. But Ted, please do us a favor, okay? Support Rand. Rand's your guy. You know, we're all in this together, and please encourage your supporters to support Rand. I tell you what, Ted, if you step up and to the plate and you actually support Rand in the next filibuster or whatever, and stop trying to hamstring him and stop palling around with terrorists like Marco Rubio, maybe I'll support you if you win the Republican nomination. But right now, not feeling it. You got anything more you want to say, Laura?
No.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Freedom Report Podcast today. We really appreciate you guys. Do us a favor, buy the book, Hannah's Voice by Rob Grindstaff, because he's the guy who's helping us bring the shows to you. And, of course, you don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.